Welcome back to BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare educational and research facilities through expert design and insight. Once again, I'm your host, Brian Moore, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. In this episode, Justin Beadle and I discuss how collaboration can drive design process, future trends, and how to foster healthy design culture on projects and with teams. Let me introduce our guest. Justin Beadle is a design principal with BSA and also serves as the St. Louis studio director. Prior to BSA, Justin worked for Blitz, where he held several roles: principal, design director, and project architect. He also worked for Fow Long Architecture. Justin received his Master of Architecture and Master of Construction Management from Washington University in St. Louis. He is a registered architect and a member of NCARB.
Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
I'm really excited to have you on, talk about design culture a little bit and your passion for it. I've had a chance to talk with you on a few different occasions and see you speak when we've been at the St. Louis studio. But before we get into the substance of our conversation, like I like to do with a lot of our guests, when they join for the first time, can you share some background with us? And most importantly, what got you interested in architecture when you were growing up?
Yeah, I've always said Legos, and I used to feel a little bit like that wasn't a very unique story. I mean, what architect born in the 80s didn't play with Legos? But as I play with my kids and Legos and watch them and how they play with it, I realized that I played with them in a specific way that I think still impacts me.
Yeah.
Of course, there was assembly, but I really was always about the story. I remember this one really detailed diorama I set up. It was an underwater scene, and I had screw eyes and fishing lines suspending scuba divers attacking some sort of base or something. And it was like this moment in time story that I had frozen. And I think that that's really how I still think about architecture. It's like, what's the scaffolding we're creating for stories in people's lives?
Yeah, that reminds me of my 16-year-old. He's got a full shelf full of these things, and a lot of them are like Star Wars and Marvel, but he's got them set up in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I have often talked. I'm like, is he going to end up being an architect or an engineer because of the way his brain works? I mean, you see things differently, right?
For sure.
You are a design principal here with BSA. What does the term design principal mean to you?
For me, it's about being the glue. Our people are talented. Our clients are visionary. For me, it's about how do we get them to come together to create really clear, meaning concept that all the other designers can plug into. I think that the most typical way, that's the most typical way to think about it. It's also meaningful to think of the role as some sort of editor, helping to clarify and reveal the story that others have already come up with.
Oh, that's interesting. So talk a little bit about your approach to the design process with clients, and how do you balance creativity and then these practical considerations?
Yeah, for me, it's first about admitting to myself and the client that it's a process. So many of our needs these days are met instantly, and it can be difficult to sign up for something that's going to be a journey.
Right.
We want that first meeting to be a huge home run.
Oh, yeah.
Both sides of the table can get frustrated when our clients don't immediately see our genius. Kidding, of course. I mean, clients sometimes don't understand why it takes so long, right? Like, we told you, now do it.
Right.
And you know, to get through that, you have to really think about the relationship of the relationships that support the project. Mm-hmm. You have to think about the people and the personalities involved, and not just the architecture that's right for them, but also how do you explain it to them. Your note about balance is right on for me. I think the best architecture is about all the things, not just solving for them. That can be chaos, even if you do it right.
Right.
But solving for them in an elegant way where a single clear message comes through in the architecture. It's about the experience of the place and the practical requirements. And that's why design takes time.
Oh, that's interesting. So when you sit down with a client to collaborate with them, what do you do to understand their needs, and how does that impact design?
Yeah, perhaps the obvious answer is listening to them, but of course that's easier said than done.
Seems obvious, right?
Yeah. Many of our projects have multifaceted client groups, and they almost always have talked to each other less than you would expect for starting a really, you know, meaningful project. The project usually starts to reveal itself in conversation. We can ask clarifying questions and present options. We discuss peer institutions and learn exactly what our client is and how we can think like them as we design.
I hear that a lot, and I, you know, coming from the outside, I've been with BSA a little over a year now and wasn't in the architectural engineer AEC space before. I see architects as such creative people that when you walk into some of these meetings, I'm sure it's like, I have the solution for you. I've created this And what may be missing is that listening skill of picking up on, well, that's great, mm-hmm. but we need this, right?
Yeah, I think it is sometimes difficult to course correct when you're so convinced about what could be right. And maybe you know where the story will end up. Mm-hmm. But I think, like I said earlier, admitting that there's a process here and letting yourself be open to that and not just run to the end really makes for meaningful and kind of unique opportunities that you might not discover otherwise.
Interesting. So how do you promote incorporating sustainable and innovative design elements into your projects?
Yeah, first by talking about it. You know, architecture and construction are notoriously slow industries to change. We love to start a project exactly the same way that we did before. And that's great in a certain way. You know, I love the consistency that that can lead to, but it can also mean you pick your head up one day and you're starting a project the way you did 20 years ago.
Right.
That's what you've always done. And so our role as experts is really to lead our clients to what's next for them. The popular way to look at this with sustainability is to look for natural alignments between their goals and what we know are kind of current sustainable technologies out there so that we can recommend really high value solutions. I think that's a really important part of it. Mm-hmm. The other part of it is really being an advocate for what's next and pushing a little bit on our clients. You know, I think we need to admit to ourselves the reality of our environment and the world right now, and architects can be a real part of the solution in offering new ideas or new strategies to projects that might not make sense on day one, but as part of the process become something really meaningful.
Yeah, and that's one of our secondary tags. And I don't even know if you realize you said it, but design that inspires what's next.
Sure.
So I wanted to ask about problem solving and what are some of the problems you look to solve in a project through the design process and any insights you can provide there?
Yeah, it really varies project to project. Like I said, everything is unique there and we're always looking to take the limited resources that we have and solve really the problems that make the most impact. I think I find that human experience is really the most overlooked problem and what I as a design principal try to, you know, be the glue to bring together. I think we often as a society think about buildings as containers for things.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a way that this is true, that a classroom is just a room with desks or an MRI room is just a room with an MRI.
Right.
But this can sometimes miss the tissue that connects these places, the way we get to them, the reason we go to them. And so I want to make sure our teams are designing places that people go to because they want to and not just because they have to. Of course, that's a little
difficult. Really good way to say that.
Yeah. Of course, that's a little difficult with a cancer center, right? Like no one wants to go there, but we need to ask how, you know, why you might choose one over another. And I think that's really about the experience that a place provides. And we work with really people who are really dedicated to their craft.
Right.
And if we can support that and come alongside them, we create really meaningful places.
Yeah, environment's a huge part of that. You know, I want to be in places, even if I don't want to be there, that are welcoming and comfortable. And so that's really interesting. Let's talk for a moment about design culture, kind of the whole reason I wanted to bring you in. How do you foster healthy design culture inside our BSA studios?
So I'll pick up the empathy thread here. We really want to make sure we're embodying our clients and the people they serve as we're designing spaces. To do this, we have to be curious about what we don't know yet. I find that as I get older and hopefully gain more experience, that this is an intentional practice to remain curious and to not be the first to speak, to not share my opinion immediately, but to listen and ask myself why something is the way it is a couple of times. Why does the client want it this way? Function. Okay, why is function important to them? And so on. I want to help our teams get really meaningful solutions that seem obvious in the end. I think that's something that people miss with great architecture, is to often look at a building and say, oh, it had to be like that. But really, before that solution was proposed, no one thought it had to be like
that
with really great architecture. There's a building in California called the Salk Institute that's like this for me. Mm. And when you visit, you see it and you're like, well, yeah, of course they would do it like this. It's on a coastal site and it just seems to set up and frame that view and it's a lab and it has a really novel solution to it. And you go there and it seems so natural, but it's obvious that no one had thought of it or done it before.
It's really a
seminal work of architecture for that reason.
So we're actually able to do this in person because you're visiting our Indianapolis studio and doing a design charrette. And it just occurred to me, I don't really know what a design charrette is. So for any of our listeners who, like me, are new to that terminology. What is a design charrette and what are you guys trying to do?
Yeah, a charrette is one of many terms that architects use to differentiate themselves and prove how much more we know. That's really what it is. No, I think it just means getting everyone in the same room to think about a problem. Hopefully it's messy, have actual physical trace paper on the table and try to frame a problem in a really loose way and see how many ideas we can generate and then talk about the merits of them, maybe choose by advantages and get to something that at least gives the team some guidance. It's not about coming to one solution or a survival of the fittest competition, like this is the idea that won today, but really putting as many ideas on the table as we can so that we can think about the problem from multiple directions.
So really a brainstorming session, if you
will. Right, exactly. And that gets back to what I started with, that charrette is just a complicated word that architects have come up with.
No, I love it. And I is that one of the more fun things I would think that you can do is
These,
you know, whiteboarding sessions where you get to kick around a bunch of ideas?
Yeah, for me it is. I think there are other people who find it to be a more of a stretch, that's not where you want to be, right? You want to be in a situation where the process is linear and there's like one question to answer instead of all the questions.
Right.
But yeah, as part of building design culture, I think it's good to get comfortable thinking about that. It also is practice for many other things that we have to do. You know, how many times does a client pull you aside after a meeting and say, like, what about this? And you need to think on your feet and be really flexible.
Right.
You know, and talk to them. So I think it's a good exercise for maintaining curiosity, for getting fluid and talking about design, for getting fluid and talking about your reasons why, so that you can do it in the world.
How do you strike a balance then on design teams between this creativity that we've been talking about and efficiency?
Yeah, a wise architect I used to work with used to say that there's a 5-minute, 5-hour, and 5-day solution to every problem. Key is really knowing from the beginning what type of solution that we're looking for, and then being disciplined enough to follow through on just that solution. Architects and designers in general love to really dive deep into a problem, and that's not always what can be done, given a schedule or given a budget,
right,
given everything. And so we just have to be careful about not turning every problem into more than it is.
Right, because there's always a finite amount of time that you can spend on it, of course.
And
right?
I think getting clear on that with project managers and project architects is really can reduce friction in the team, because I think that's where the mismatch is, right? Like they ask you for the 5-minute solution, you come back with the genius of a 5-hour solution and they're not satisfied. And it's like, yeah, because of course they're not, because you got to something great. They probably don't disagree, but you blew the design budget or the client's budget.
So how do you and the other design principals stay up to date on the latest trends that are going on?
So by staying curious, I think, is the main one, and promoting kind of a state of not being satisfied with what we did the last time. And it's great to have architects and designers, interior designers and engineers that know how to deliver a project. Sometimes they need to be encouraged to think about it in a new and different way. For me, it helps to do that. It helps to stay in community with other architects and designers and other firms, and to be a little bit angry when their design is better than ours.
Right.
In a collegial way.
Sure.
I know in the Midwest here, it's tough to say you're angry sometimes. But yeah, I think the other part of it is by actually thinking about things. You know, I'm always surprised by how easy it is to do something without thinking. I think we've all had that experience with a partner or a friend where they ask why we did something, and we get, you know, if we're honest and not immediately defensive, we can say, I don't know. But it's not really a good way to operate in a relationship or as an architect. You need to actually research and read articles and like look at what's going on out there and not just sit down at your board on your own and like come up with whatever you think is right.
Right. And I'm picking up on through several of your answers, you know, this idea of curiosity. And I think of the saying, you know, good is the enemy of great, and being complacent. And I feel like we're probably distant cousins in terms of marketing and architecture, right? But there is a creativity involved with both. And it's the same approach, right? You're staying curious, trying to stay up on the latest trends and not just do what you did 5 years ago, because it's not going to work the same way anymore. So.
Yeah. And it comes back to the like 5-minute or 5-hour problem, right? Like if it is a 5-minute problem, great, do what you did the last time. But when you have 5 hours or 5 days or 5 months, you actually are afforded the time to research and to figure out what could be a new and innovative solution for the brief.
So speaking of trends in the future of architecture, what are some of your thoughts on current or emerging trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, Can we not say AI? I mean, it's there, and architecture needs, but I think architecture needs less charlatans and not more. And I'm worried that AI isn't really helping.
Okay.
That there are already enough plugs out there for it. I think circular material innovation is a really interesting one. If headlines are to be believed, then we are really close to recycling our concrete or specifying fungus leather soon, which would be great.
Interesting.
The bleeding of residential and hospitality design into everything is by no means a new trend, but I think it's really having a moment in healthcare and higher ed spaces, creating these really hospitable spaces that people want to be as differentiators from one institution to another. And it's not just about aesthetic terms, but like I said, it's about empathizing with people and thinking about the people that use the spaces we design.
Oh, that's good. Can you share with me some of your thoughts on the role of technology? You just kind of talked about AI a little bit. In shaping the future of design.
Yeah. A long time ago, I was introduced to an article called Form Follows Software. And at the time, it was offensive to me and perhaps other people too. The idea was that certain software was steering architects to certain types of solutions or forms based on the capabilities of the user interface or the way it, you know, dictated preferences to architects. In any case, at the time, I was like, no, not me. You know, I'm not manipulated by myself. I'm the one in the driver's seat. I'm choosing, not the software. And I think, and I hope that's true, but looking at it more deeply now, I see it another way, that, and that is that software and technology is enabling us to think in ways and think of solutions that we really couldn't have conceived of previously because it can process more data than we can on our own.
Right.
To me, that's the future, a richly evidence-based design supported by AI, I'll say it, that enables us to process and include more parameters in our design than ever before.
So last question for you. Any lessons that you've learned over your career that still impact you to this day?
The hardest lesson for me as an architect has been that it's really about the people and not the building. You know, our clients will live with our designs much longer than we spend designing them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I look back to that Lego set in my room, there was a little bit too much maniacal control, right? What it had to be. And it was always a problem if brother or sister came in and tried to influence in some way.
But we'll touch it.
Exactly. It's like,
it's perfect. Leave it alone,
please. And I think, you know, that's how I started in architecture for sure. And the interest, but the most interesting thing about it is that we can't, you know, hold that minifig in place forever,
right?
Someone's going to live there. Someone's going to do something that we didn't intend. And we're really creating scaffolds for those things. And so I think when I think about projects now, I think about how rarely I visit the old projects I've done, and by how I touch base with the friends that I've made on those fairly often, you know, learning. And that's really changed my mindset about how I approach those projects, thinking about the people as the lasting thing here in the architecture, maybe a little less so, at least in terms of how I relate to it. I think, you know, the idea that the buildings are more important is probably pretty typical, especially when you're just out of school. You see clients as really some sort of enabling patron.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are good projects that are delivered that way. But if you can think about it in a more people first way, I think there's a way that a shared vision evolves between you and a client. I think about a school I designed in Los Angeles, and it started with a visionary woman who had founded this independent school, and a team of teachers and consultants and, you know, everyone who came around to create something really special. And I think it was mostly about the team and not necessarily the architecture that really set it apart, but in the end it was all of it, right? And the thing that's changing the kids' lives that go to that school now is maybe the architecture, but it's more so the actual human relationships that they have there. And I think being honest about that,
that's a really good way to say that, and a really good punctuation to our conversation. I know I brought you on to talk about a very specific thing here with design culture. Thank you for joining me. I'd love to have you back on again in the future too, to have another discussion. So
sounds great, Brian. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Justin for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with him on LinkedIn. If you're interested in learning more about BSA life structures or our design culture, we encourage you to visit our website, BSALifestructures.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. And we've got more content and project stories to share on social media, so be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.